Ajahn, could you please help to elaborate about the difference between chanda and loba, and about its arise now, chanda and loba?
What is chanda?
Chanda, it chitasika.
Yeah. Yes. So what's its characteristic or function?
Characteristic, it interested in...
Yes, to have an interest. In what?
In the object.
In the object.
Yeah.
And loba?
It attached.
It is attached to...
Attached to the object.
Object.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Can you give an example or... And what is up
now? You're
now
asking about conventional situations. When I do this, is it chanda or attachment? But we can't actually give examples in that sense. I mean, they give examples in the text, but we have to understand that they are for the purpose of illustration. We cannot then say, well, if that situation given in the text occurs, it must be chanda rather than lopa or vice versa. Another aspect to consider is that also in the text they give kind of similes. For loba, they talk about like meat sticking to a hot pan, a hot frying pan. When you put meat into a hot pan on the stove, it sticks to the bottom of the pan, of the saucepan, right? So that is a simile to illustrate loba. Chanda, I can't remember any simile that's given, but is quite different because it has an interest in the object rather than being attached to the object. Another aspect to consider is that chanda arises with both wholesome and unwholesome jittas, whereas loba, as we know, is always akusala. We can consider the implications of all this information, but there's no way of saying in terms of conventional situations whether it's chanda or loba that's arising.
So can I say every moment of the reality that having loba, chanda there?
Well, that would be correct, but I'm not sure if that helps or not.
What about nao gung? Is there interest in asking the question? Is a chanda an interest at this moment of asking the question or learning more about what chanda is?
Yes, interest in...
Yes.
Yeah.
Interest in hearing more.
I mean, interest in conventional term.
Not or? In conventional term, even at this moment of listening. Is there interest to hear what is said? Because, as everyone keeps stressing, understanding has to be now. So is there any interest? For example, now someone is taking some things out of the bag, but I think for you there's no interest in what's going on because you're interested in discussing your question, right? So there's interest in hearing the answer right now. So that's chanda. And is there attachment to hearing the answer?
Yes.
Some moments. Yes, some moments, sure. Of attachment, maybe some moments of understanding, some moments of wise considering, different moments. But that strong interest to raise the question, no matter it's kusala chanda or akusala chanda, usually different moments. But because you're interested in finding out more about Dhamma, there must be some moments of kusala chanda there. It's not just interest in finding out what someone ate for breakfast, for example. But anyway, that is the nature of chanda right now, no matter it's kusala or akusala, different from the moment of just liking what is heard, or liking the flowers, or liking Ajahn's dress, different from that interest.
Also, we have to bear in mind that the conventional terms that we use for these realities, we understand in a conventional way. But realities are momentary, and the function of each of these mental factors is just momentary. So any concept we have of interest in or attachment to doesn't really fit. But we have to have a label, and these are the most appropriate labels. We can understand the difference between an interest in something and attachment to it. For example, we have an interest in the Dhamma. Doesn't mean we don't have attachment to having more understanding and this sort of thing, but we also have a definite interest. And this is based on, of course, our interest in previous lifetimes. So when we hear the Dhamma in this lifetime, it is something we want to hear more of. So that's an example of an interest as opposed to an attachment. But the difference is not relevant unless we are talking about awareness and understanding of those realities. And we have no way of knowing if or when awareness will take either of those realities as its object, because this is just by conditions. But certainly learning more about these realities can be a condition for them to become object of awareness or understanding at some time.
How many jatis does lobha arise with? Jati meaning plane, like.
Lobha arise with akusala.
Only with akusala chittas. Does lobha arise with kusala chittas?
No.
Does it arise with vipaka chittas?
No.
Does it arise with any kriya chittas? So it just arises with akusala chittas. How about chanda?
Chanda arise with kusala and akusala.
And can it arise with vipaka chittas?
Vipaka is the result.
It's result,
no,
yes.
No.
What about when it's kusala vipaka chittas with roots, like in deep sleep? Can chanda arise with those chittas?
Yes.
For example, we know sati, for example, arises with those kusala vipaka chittas, even in deep sleep. How about chanda?
Yeah, with chanda.
And how about kriya chittas? Can chanda arise with kriya chittas?
Yes.
Which kriya chittas? Chong and Lop, maybe you don't know what kriya chittas are. So those kinds of chittas which are not kusala and not akusala and not result, not vipaka, they are kriya. It means they are not cause and they're not result. Okay? Can chanda arise with any kriya chittas? And if so, which ones?
For arahata.
For the arahat, yes, yes.
Okay.
Because why does chanda only arise with the kriya chittas of the arahat, but not for the kriya chittas for us?
For the other kriya chitta, just very specific function of, like, no wholesome or unwholesome chitta for that function.
No wholesome, no unwholesome chittas, no, for the arahat, no new karma at all. But the sobhana factors, the beautiful chetasikas, we won't call them kusala because no more kusala. So the sobhana chetasikas, the beautiful mental factors like awareness and panya and wholesome chanda, well, so beautiful chanda, they still arise, so they arise with kriya chittas in the case of the arahat. But for us, the kriya chittas that arise in a day, like the chitta that averts to the sense object before seeing, it doesn't have any roots, any hetus, so no Kusala Chanda at that moment. We can discuss more about roots afterwards because someone else asked me a question about it. But just on Chanda, so what kind of, like Jonathan says, it also arises with akusala cheetahs. What kind of akusala cheetahs does Chanda arise with?
Moha, Lobha, akusala with Chanda.
Okay, first of all, why did you say it arises with moha?
I just think about the akusala citta arise with.
So like yesterday, we talked a lot about moha or avijja. We said it's the same. Yeah. And at the moment when there is ignorance, not knowing anything about anything, at those moments of just not knowing, is there any interest in anything?
No interest.
But at moments of attachment, is there interest in the object that there is attachment for? Like when there's attachment to the color of the flowers, is there interest at that moment?
Yes.
Yes. And when there's aversion, like we talked to Lee's question about different kinds of dosa, when one's afraid or when one's angry or irritated, is there interest in that object of dosa?
Yes.
Yes. But at moments of ignorance, no interest at all.
Wait. At the moment of ignorance, you mean ignorant only, no lobha?
Ignorant only, when there's no lobha, no dosa, just the cheetahs with moha.
Okay.
Yeah, those moments, no interest in the object. Yeah. Yes. And we talked on the first day, for example, we were talking about virya and how it arises with every cheetah except 16 of the 18 cheetahs, which we said are called ahetuka, without roots. And someone asked me to explain more about roots and what is meant. So I'll use you to help me. So first of all, because you can represent everyone here, how many roots or hetus are there?
Six.
Six. What are the six hetus?
Lobha, moha, and losha.
Yes.
And aloba, amoha,
losha. Dosa, and amoha. Yes. Yeah. And we call the first three lobha, dosa, moha, akusala roots, because they just arise with akusala cheetahs. And when akusala cheetahs arise, they are the root or the support, like the root of a tree. So they are the firm base for those cheetahs which arise. And they are the first of the roots are the first of the 24 conditions given, root condition. So at moments when there is attachment, how many roots are there with the cheetah?
Lobha, right?
When there is attachment, like if there's attachment to the flowers, two roots. What are the two roots?
Moha and lobha.
And at moments of aversion, how many roots are there?
Two. Yeah. Dosha and moha.
Moha. Yeah. And when there is no attachment and no aversion, but the citta is akusala, how many roots are there?
Moha.
Just moha. And so at those moments when there is just moha as root, no interest in the object in either by way of clinging or aversion, it's just not knowing anything.
Can you elaborate a little bit more at the moment, single root? I mean,
single
in the
root.
Reality.
Like, for example, now there's moments of seeing, and commonly after seeing, instantly there is attachment, liking what is seen. But sometimes just no liking, but still nothing known at all. And those are the moments when moha arises on its own, when there's just the root of moha, just not knowing anything. And lobha is more apparent. So most people understand more about attachment, at least gross attachment or annoyance or anger. Everyone knows about it, just even conventionally. But ignorance or not knowing is more subtle to know. But most of the day, when there is no attachment and no aversion, ignorance is there with that one root. So it's common.
You're talking about when no lobha and dosa, but without understanding.
Without understanding, without mohabha. Any kusala, because we know okay. that when the after the seeing and the other vipaka cittas and the kriya citta, there must be either kusala cittas or akusala cittas. So if they are not kusala cittas that arise, if it's not dana or metta or kusala sila or panya, any kind of kusala, it must be akusala. So if it's not lobha or dosa, then it must be moha must be there. And the other three roots, the opposite, we call them sobhana roots or beautiful roots. The reason we call them sobhana rather than just kusala is because alobha, adosa, amoha, which is the same as panya, they are not only the roots for kusala cittas, but for example, those kriya cittas we mentioned of the arahat, or for kusala vipaka cittas can also have wholesome roots. So repeat again what the sobhana roots are.
There are three, alobha, adosa, and amoha as the wholesome root. I cannot remember
okay,
the word.
Okay, that's fine. And for example, at a moment of generosity, how many of these, we call them for now wholesome roots, how many wholesome roots?
At the moment of generosity, right? Alobha and amoha. Adosa na ha? Ados. Actually, I have no
okay,
idea.
So two of these roots, alobha and adosa. So alobha is the opposite of attachment, so detachment, we can say. And adosa is the opposite of dosa, so it's non-aversion. They are the roots of all kusala cittas. So at every moment of generosity or kindness or understanding or paying respect, alobha and adosa must be there as roots. But only some of those kusala cittas also have amoha there as root. So at a moment of understanding, even if it's just a little bit of intellectual understanding, there must be three roots, alobha, adosa, and amoha. And the question before to me was, how many cittas are there that have no roots at all?
No root.
No root at all. How many kinds of cittas have no roots?
No root. Seeing.
Seeing, yes.
Seeing, hearing.
Yes.
Touching.
Yes.
Smell.
Yes.
And taste.
Taste. And one or two kinds of seeing.
One.
Seeing can be kusala vipaka, can it also be akusala vipaka?
Result of
kusala or result akusala. Of akusala.
So,
two kinds.
Okay.
One that's the result of kusala and one that's the result of akusala. So that means two seeing, two hearing.
Okay.
So 10 altogether. So that's 10 cittas which have no roots, no wholesome roots, no unwholesome roots. And what else? Any other cittas?
No root. Kriya.
Yes. What are the kriya cittas?
The aversion function.
Yes. So before the moment of seeing in a sense door process, there must be the citta which adverts to that visible object. If there's no adverting to the visible object, seeing cannot arise. And that adverting citta is a kriya citta, as you said, no roots, no kusala roots, no akusala roots. So that's one. So that's 11 cittas. What other kriya cittas? Or vipaka cittas, or any cittas?
There are some citta arise after seeing.
Right.
Also.
Yes, it doesn't matter about the name, but one, the first one, sampatichana, also two kinds, one kusala vipaka, one akusala vipaka, also no roots at all. So that's 13 now we have. And then after the sampatichana, another vipaka citta, the santirana citta, and there are three kinds. Two are kusala vipaka, one with pleasant feeling, one with neutral feeling, and one is akusala vipaka, three kinds. So then we have 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So two more to go, two more cittas without roots.
The closing citta?
One is quite easy for you to know because, like you said, that before the seeing consciousness, there must be a citta that adverts to the eye door process. So that's in the sense door processes. What about in the mind door process?
Yeah, that's one and not the same function as the previous one.
It's also a different kind of citta which has a different function because it's the citta which adverts to the object in the mind door process.
Yeah.
And that it has the function of adverting in the mind door process.
Yeah.
So this is another one. And that same kind of citta actually has a different function. It can arise in the sense door process after those vipaka cittas you mentioned, but before the kusala or akusala cittas. It's the same kind of citta, in Pali, the mano dwara vajana citta, and it can either have the function of averting to the citta in the mind or process, or it's one more citta in that sense or process. So this citta also has no roots. So that's 17. And then one more citta with no roots at all, which is very, Sroti will know.
Tell smile
him.
Of the arahat.
Arahat, the smiling consciousness of the arahat, the hasitupata citta, even though it's smile, no root at all. So those are the 18 cittas without roots. So when we were talking about virya, someone asked me to mention afterwards, Ajahn was saying it arises with almost every citta, and she asked which cittas, and the answer was it arises with all cittas except for the cittas which have no root, but apart from two. So there are two cittas which, even though they are without roots, need virya to experience the object. Chong, do you know what virya is? Just for now, we call it effort. effort, just not to confuse things further. So out of those 18 ahetuka chittas, ahetuka means without roots, do you know or can you guess which two need virya to experience the object?
Within 18, right?
Within the 18 ahetuka chittas, there are two exceptions. So virya doesn't arise with the ahetuka chittas, but two exceptions. Two must have virya to experience the object. Hung can help.
I guess it's one is hasitupada chitta,
yes.
Smiling of the arhata. Another one is manodvara.
Manodvara vajana chitta, the mind to adverting chitta, because of its strength after the bhavanga chittas and the adverting to the mind door object, it needs virya. So those two have virya, but not in the others. I just kind of went back a little bit to mention the basics about hetus, because some people were a little bit confused about these terms, hetu and ahetuka. So a little bit clearer.
The question about the chanda and loba coming from my shirt.
And so, it's all about this moment, like loba is now, chanda is now, seeing now, which is ahetuka chitta, is now, manodvara vajana chitta, the mind or process with virya, it's now. So it's actually just daily life, but as Ajahn keeps stressing, the way to understand more that there is no self is to understand more about what are the dharmas that make up life now. Like we might think, Lob and Chong tell me if this is right, we might think that we know quite a lot about different kinds of kusala or akusala, but usually it seems that it's my kindness or my attachment. Is that correct? What do you think, Lob? Yes. So if we don't hear more details about different dharmas, which are anatta, we will always think it's my attachment, my good deed. So that's the reason we're discussing these details.
Sarah? You didn't mention about the last two chitta of the process, is also no root because the Santirana perform its function.
So when Santirana performs a function, actually it can be Santirana or it can be Kusala Vipaka chittas. When Santirana performs a function, what kind of chitta is it?
Santirana.
So that's like when the chitta, very good question, when the chitta arises before kusala or akusala chittas in the sense door process, the votapanna chitta, sometimes people will say, well, what about votapanna chitta? But actually it's the manodvara vajana chitta performing the function of votapanna. And the same when those tadaramana chittas arise, if it's Santirana chitta performing the function, then it's the kind of chitta is Santirana. And also, what about when it is the patisandhi chitta of an animal? How many roots are there when it's the akusala vipaka, the patisandhi chitta of an animal? How many roots?
One, moha.
No roots. No roots at all.
I think that no root means only moha.
At the moment of birth, as an animal, no roots. What kind of chitta performs that function of patisandhi for the animal?
One.
What chitta?
Santirana. Chitta.
Santirana, exactly the same as the one you just mentioned. So Santirana chitta has how many roots?
Santirana chitta has... Santirana chitta, no root.
No roots.
Yes.
So when Santirana citta performs the function of tadaramana, or when it performs the function of investigating in the sense door process, or when it performs the function of patisandhi that you just mentioned, no roots.
Mm. Oh.
What about if Santirana Citta performs the function of patisandhi in the human realm? How many roots are there?
Same, no root. Human being.
Did you say three?
Moha.
No.
In human being, for the affect, the defective people, Santirana Citta is to experience the object of akusala vipaka with moha mula citta.
Whenever Santirana Citta performs any function, no matter it's in the idol process or tadaramana or patisandhi, no matter in the animal realm or the human realm, no roots at all. So the first day in this room when you asked about patisandhi, you told me there are 19 kinds of cittas that perform the function of rebirth. And one kind of citta that is akusala vipaka, santirana, which is akusala vipaka, performs that function of rebirth in unhappy realms, no roots. Another kind of santirana, which is kusala vipaka, can perform the function of rebirth in the human or happy realms, no roots. That's like you said, when one is born very handicapped from the first moment of conception. So no roots when Santirana performs a function.
In any
so
case,
that's why only 18 are Hetuka cheetahs.
Actually,
it's a very difficult topic, yeah.
Actually, related to the topic of last day about my questions about the citta, one citta perform the function of other citta in other chatti. my question last day about the citta perform the function of other citta when they are different chatti. I think that because how can Santirana Citta can perform the function of Patisandhi Citta because it arises with the same cetasika? So we say that.
What jati, what kind of citta is Santirana Citta?
Santirana Citta is Vipaka Citta.
Vipaka Citta. When it performs the function of birth, what kind of citta is it?
Vipaka also, but...
When it performs the function of tadaramana, what kind of citta is it?
Of course, vipaka.
When it arises in the idol process, what kind of citta is it?
Vipaka.
So it doesn't change jati, it's always vipaka citta. And whenever it arises, are there any kusala or akusala roots with it? Whenever Santirana performs any function, are there any roots with it?
No.
No, none at all. Does Sanya and Vedana arise? Do they arise with it when it arises?
Of course.
Of course, because?
Sanya and Vedana is the seven universal.
They arise with every single citta. Mm. So the point is exactly the same kind of citta accompanied by the same cetasikas, same jati, but just it performs a different function.
Hmm.
Okay?
Thank you.
Very difficult points, I know. Yeah, yes.
I just want to ask another question, but I think...
Please, yes.
About the four kinds of viriya. We know that four kinds of viriya to prevent akusala, which has not arise yet, and viriya to overcome akusala, which has arrived already. So I think that that's not the function of viriya, but the function of panya, which is supported by the level of viriya, by the strength of viriya. So of course, but with another sopana cetasika, but leader by the strength of viriya at that level, so panya can overcome, panya can prevent. Is that right? And the second point, can I understand that in the first case, when panya arises, so it the strength of panya can help the citta prevent akusala not to arise after that, and the second case to overcome when akusala arise already, and then after that panya arises and arises to understand the akusala that has arise in the reverse citta. Is that right?
Just one at a time, please. One word or one question at a time.
I think your first question was, it seems when we're talking about the four padanas, the right efforts for you, it seems that actually we're talking about panya.
That's yes. Your first question.
That is your question?
Okay.
Do you know effort or viriya already, or just think about it?
I just think about this.
Keep on listening to the words, but not understanding this moment, whether it is the viriya or not. Can it be known?
It can be known by panya.
Yes, but is there panya now to know it?
I don't think so.
Is there panya at level of it can understand viriya as it is right now?
No.
No. So no matter how much we learn about the words, about the truth, but as long as it's not the understanding of what appears, it's impossible to understand. For example, does viriya, excuse me, chanda, we come back to chanda, does chanda arise with lobha?
Yes.
At the moment when lobha is there, what is known?
The lobha and chanda.
Lobha is known. Does chanda always also known?
No.
See, that's why even lobha is there, it's still I, not a reality. So when we talk about any reality, we just talk about that which cannot be taken for self or I at all. Otherwise, I'll keep on. I think about viriya, I think about the four viriya, I think about this and that. So, and then maybe tomorrow you'll forget. Or just remember, not all yet. But the best thing is to understand how can the understanding will condition moment of direct understanding of whatever appears now, that which appears only. Otherwise, how can there be the understanding of reality as not self? For example, at moment of lobha, even there is chanda, chanda is not known. At moment of dosa, does chanda arise with it?
Yes.
Can it be known?
No.
See, but we learn to understand that the difference of realities are not easy to learn to understand, and it's much more difficult to really have direct understanding of it with anattaness, no choice by conditions. So each moment will condition the understanding of anatta. This is the point of the teachings. All dhammas are anatta. So any word that read that can condition the understanding of anatta, it has to begin from word to word, or what that can be seen and that which cannot be seen. But we learn to understand that no matter what, they are not self at all. Viriya is there, chanda is there. At moment of dosa, is there chanda?
Yes.
What can be known? What can be known?
What can be known, right?
What can be known at moment of dosa? What can panya understand and
panya,
begin?
Yeah.
And begin to know. See, even it's there, it cannot be known without considering, like at moment of dosa, dosa can be known, okay, right?
Yeah.
But chanda, does it, is it known? See, but by and from hearing one knows that it's there. All are dhammas. So we learn to have conditions for direct understanding to that which appears. But it's not easy to understand it as not self. That's why we have to have learning or intellectual understanding as no self, no one at all, no matter it is seeing or sandhirana, sampaticchana, or whether it is kusala or vipaka or kriya, just to condition, to support the understanding of no self. And this is the skill in studying the teachings of the Buddha, to understand that which can be understood level by level. So now, from the very beginning, there is the basic understanding. Whatever appears now is not I or anything permanent at all. It has its own characteristic which appears, but ignorance cannot understand that. So it takes that for something permanent, and usually I. Even you might say, I don't think that I'm seeing, but after seeing 3 moments after that, asava is there, tiddasava is there. That's why no matter we say it or not that I'm seeing, it's there. Because it arises as soon as there is seeing, hearing, any things happen. So at moment of dosa, chanda cannot be known, but dosa can be known. So at moment of no dosa, no lopa, can there be chanda?
Only moha, then it cannot be arise with.
Because it's not there with moha.
Yeah.
So can you select what should be the object of direct understanding? Can anyone take breath to be known? Or sitting position or whatever? That's why if we study the word, like how many cittas and cetasikas and rupas are there, but still the self, the wrong understanding of reality can lead one to the wrong path. That's why when we hear any word of the teachings, it just conditions the understanding of no self and no one, anytime. Chanda is not I, viriya is not I, lopa is not I. Then we can understand what is meant by more and more words of the Buddha. Like now, is it the first viriya? Samapatthana? What is it? The first one that you said? The first viriya that you said, what is that? Say it again, please.
As I understand that, the first level, the first case is the when Panya arises with the supporting of Viriya, its strength can prevent the akusala arises after that.
Is it not now?
Yes, not now.
Oh. It's now. Unknowing, yeah. Unknown, unknowingly. See, that now the cetasikas are performing their function. No one there. And while listening with viriya to understand, at that moment it is avoiding evil. By no one, but by realities which arise together, not self. Even we have heard so many, many hundred thousand times, not self, but it's there. That's why without the words of the Buddha, it's impossible to understand. But when we hear the word, we should understand the truth that it's not I. This is the point. That will support the understanding when there is direct awareness. For example now, hardness is hard. Is that condition enough to understand it? That which is hard arises.
Not enough.
Not enough. That's why we learn to understand with the idea of no self all the time as the basic or the root to grow more, to understand this moment. Otherwise, it's like postpone or move on to other object all the time, not to moment of seeing right now or hearing right now. That's why it takes quite a long, long time to have the sapa prinya, which is not just intellectual understanding. It has to be the vipassana jnana, not the first, second, third. In order to be the fourth one, there must be the understanding of whatever appears, not of that one has heard. So many things, but not understanding whatever appears now.
Now, what is the characteristic or function of panya?
To understand what citta is experiencing, understand the object of the citta, the nature of the object.
Why do you associate that with the continuation or the ceasing of akusala that has already arisen? Because you said you think that the right effort for the termination of akusala that has already arisen is a function of panya. You've just explained that the function of panya is to understand the true nature of the object.
Of course, at the moment of panya, itself could prevent, keep away from akusala, of course, but I think strength of panya at that level can prevent akusala after that.
I think you have an idea that if there's more panya, there is less akusala and more kusala. But
In the aspect,
it doesn't mean that every time panya is aware of akusala, that the akusala ceases. People who don't have panya also, they don't have continuous akusala. They can have kusala. The same as the person who has developed panya.
Ajahn mentioned about at the moment of the dosha, dosa can be known, but chanda cannot be known.
It cannot be known. Oh, she asked whether it appears now, like now, if one's annoyed with one's friend for making too much noise or something like this, at that moment of dosa, what is commonly apparent?
Okay. I want to clarify about if this dosa appear clear and chanda, and chanda not appear clear at this moment. Just clarify if I understand be known mean about be appear, what Ajahn normally talking about.
At a moment of annoyance, maybe annoyance at something someone has said or someone has done or anything like Lee mentioned, whatever one doesn't like, what is obvious at that moment?
Dosa.
The dosa. Everyone knows about dosa, even though it's usually taken for my dosa. So that moment of annoyance, the annoyance is obvious. So it's apparent, or we can say it appears. But now you know chanda is there because there is an interest in that object that there is annoyance about. So it's there. But what is most obvious or most apparent is the dosa. So it's not that chanda cannot appear, but the question is, does it appear like now?
It doesn't
appear. If one's annoyed, what appears? That's the point.
On the point of the simile of chanda, I believe that it's the hand that reach the object, right? Like lobha just attached to the object, but is it chanda that
reaches out to touch the object?
So it depends on condition that maybe sometime chanda appears.
When one has heard and has considered carefully that interest, chanda is there at that moment of dosa, there may be conditions for chanda to appear, but not by expecting or wishing. Yeah. But the question was, what usually appears? Okay. What is usually apparent? Okay. But if one sets a rule and says it must be dosa that appears and it cannot be chanda, then it's wrong again.
Can we use other word for all reality, not just one word? Do we have to keep the word chanda as interest? Or it can be whatever that we can understand by our own language. For example, can we use the word satisfied to be angry? No? Oh, yes.
We can all agree that.
That's why there can be chanda to be angry.
Or inclined to at that moment of being angry with the object. One is inclined to be mad at that moment. So whatever word, interested in the object, satisfied with the object, inclined to that object, it just shows it's that Dhamma, not anyone's chanda. You may have a better word in Vietnamese than we have in English.
That's why chanda cannot arise with the 16 ahetuka cittas, because no choice. It's conditioned by kamma, to see now, to hear now, and so on. Even sampaticchana, santirana, are the vipaka of the kamma, the same kamma. That's why no need for chanda at all. You cannot make choice to hear this or to see that. So no chanda with seeing, hearing, so on. What do you like?
What I like, right? I like, swimming. Thai food, something like that. Understanding. Yeah.
Are you interested in the smartphone?
I do.
Chanda or interest or attachment?
Interest and attachment to?
With chanda.
With chanda, yeah.
He likes helping people, making himself useful.
What can be known now?
See, what can be known, right? Like sound?
When you talk about that.
Why do you say sound?
I'm just thinking about the, it appear.
It appears.
Yeah.
Right. So some things appear and other things, generally speaking, do not appear. Right? Some things appear quite frequently. Other things may appear occasionally.
Right.
And some things we've heard about don't really appear at all.
Yeah.
So no matter how much we want to learn about some dhammas, they're never going to appear in this lifetime anyway.
Can you repeat that?
So no matter how much we may want to study about some dhammas, yeah, and that what is their characteristic, their function, their proximate cause, their manifestation, some of them are never going to appear in this lifetime.
Mm.
It's more important to know about things that are likely to appear and potentially be the object of awareness and understanding. That doesn't mean we don't take an interest in these other things, but we appreciate that there's a limit to the relevance of that information to the development of awareness and understanding.
Like when you said, cannot appear, we don't talk about the Hasitupata Citta because it cannot appear, the smiling consciousness of the Buddha. It will never appear, so no point talking about it in any detail. It cannot appear, but the chanda that arises with dosa, usually it doesn't appear, but it can appear. So different. Sanya, usually it doesn't appear, but not impossible to appear. So it's different.
Can you tell when it appears?
Only when there is awareness and understanding can it be said that it appears. Otherwise, there's just ignorance, not knowing. So visible object is seen. How many visible objects have been seen during this discussion? Countless billions and billions of visible objects have been experienced, have been appearing, but in darkness, not known at all. So if there's no understanding, no awareness, nothing is known at all. Even goodness, like we know being kind or having metta is good, goodness. But if there is no understanding, how can it be known when there is metta or when there is goodness and when it is attachment? For example, like when you help your mother, we know there must be moments of kindness and generosity. But is there kindness and generosity all the time, or just for brief moments? What do you think, John?
Just brief moments.
Just brief moments. If there is no understanding, if one has never heard about different dharmas, different realities, is it possible to know when there is kindness and when there is attachment or ignorance?
Yes. No, sorry. No.
No. So without understanding, even though there are moments of goodness and kindness in the day, but there's no knowing anything about them, no knowing what is the goodness, what is the kindness. We just think of a situation like, oh, I cooked lunch for my mother, so for half an hour I was kind. But it's just an idea that it should be kind because I cooked lunch. But nothing is known about which dharmas, which realities are kind and which ones are not kind. And we think it's kind, but we think it's my kindness. I'm the one who cooked the lunch for my mother. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So this is why we are talking in more detail about different kinds of dharmas, because without understanding, nothing is known.
You mentioned about the understanding and awareness of the reality that needs to appear. Okay.
And the realities that may appear depend on a number of factors, but obviously the more that understanding is developed, the more realities may appear.
So at the moment of kindness, this is for Chong or Hang, is there any akusala at that moment of kindness?
Sorry, can you repeat?
At the moment of kindness, let's say it's the true moment of kindness, at a moment of generosity, is there any akusala at that moment?
Yes.
What kind of akusala at that moment? At the same moment of kindness, when there is a moment of generosity, is there any akusala? Is there any attachment? Is there any anger, for example, at that same moment?
No, I don't.
No. So, Hang, at that moment of kindness, or now at a moment of understanding, no akusala. So, is there wholesome virya at that moment?
Yes.
At the moment of kindness, or at the moment of understanding now, is there wholesome virya?
Yes, of course.
And we discussed before that virya is patient, so at that moment it's patient to prevent akusala from arising at that moment of kusala. So now if there's a moment of understanding, the patience with it prevents any akusala that hasn't arisen from arising at that moment. So this is not the function of understanding, it's the function of virya at that moment to prevent akusala that hasn't arisen, to be patient at this moment. And when akusala does arise, like if there is dosa now at that moment, and then immediately after there is a moment of understanding, is there wholesome virya at that moment?
Sorry, I get lost. Could you repeat?
Let's say there is a moment of irritation now. Irritation. One's annoyed about something, but there is understanding. Understanding follows and understands that annoyance as akusala dharma. At the moment of understanding, is there wholesome virya?
Yes, of course.
And that wholesome virya is patient to prevent akusala from arising at that moment.
Oh.
At that moment with understanding. So it has a different function. So different kinds of wholesome virya at different moments. In the first case, it prevented the akusala from arising that hasn't arisen. In the second case, when the akusala has arisen, it prevents more akusala from arising at that moment. So as Ujjan said, it's now, it's daily life, being patient at moments of wholesomeness with understanding. Usually it's one padana, one right effort at a time in the development of the path, and just at moments of enlightenment, all four padanas together.
Oh, at the apple.
Yes, at moments of enlightenment, all fall together.
Can you explain the meaning of visuddhimagga or purification in the sense of understand development?
What is developing now?
Maybe no.
It must, not you, but they perform their functions.
What is developing now, you mean?
At moment of understanding.
Understanding?
It will lead to enlightenment.
Yes.
Magga is the path, enlightenment, visuddhi, from akusala. Little by little.
Yes.
A sick person cannot get up quickly.
When there's a little bit of understanding now, beginning to consider, for example, what is virya now, how it's a dharma that is not self, is it the beginning of the way that leads to purifying, to developing more clear understanding?
Yes.
Like the very beginning, like the pre-kindergarten, just beginning to lead towards the path. Like now, if there's a moment of kusala, beginning of with understanding, beginning of right effort, but just the beginning. But that understanding begins to show a light on what life is, what is true and real in life. And that is the beginning of the way that leads to purification, visuddhi.
Can we think of it as the development of more kusala and the gradual decline of akusala, purification in that sense? So it's just a gradual process. There are particular stages that are set out in the Visuddhimagga, but as a general way of considering it, it is just a way of explaining how different kinds of kusala are developed, and akusala is gradually eradicated until enlightenment, which is the ultimate purification, is attained. Is there some particular aspect you are interested in?
Just because when I remember that name, I'm thinking about my cleaning or my purification, so I just want to make sure that what is the correct meaning of the Aguttimara purification.
Long, our friend who left, he one day raises the question on metta. He said that according to the text, one the proximate cause for metta is seeing the lovable side of other beings. And he said that, but when we meet people we don't know, so we don't know their good sides, but still metta can arise. So what are your comments on this?
Is there metta now?
Not at this precise moment, but there can be at other moments.
So can we expect to have metta to the stranger?
When we go on the street and we might think about, oh, I can help this person, or just like being friendly, and at that moment there can
yes,
be.
Yes, but what yeah. People around us now?
Not at this moment, because there's no condition
so
to think about them.
It's like that moment, just like that moment. That's why the development of metta is the moment of having good wishes for everyone, for anyone, not to harm them.
Yeah. So can we say that this good side of other people can be understood in a larger sense, like to consider them as equal?
It's not like see the good side, when see the lovable side, like if one sees that Nina is needing help, one is considering if one was in that place, what would be useful, what would be helpful for her. It doesn't mean one's thinking, oh, this is a very good person, so I'm going to help this one but not that one because that one isn't so good. It's not like that. Seeing the lovable side, it's just a translation. It means just seeing what is helpful or useful for that person. how that person may benefit at that moment, thinking of the other's need. That's what is meant. Mm-hmm. It's just a translation, mm. Yes.
It narrow.
Like now I can see that Roti would like a microphone, so one sees what is useful, so one would like to help that person. This is what is meant. I'm not thinking about what kind of character Roti is or whether he deserves it more than anyone else. I'm just thinking about what he would like, what would be useful for him at this time.
Also, just before Roti comes in, to add to that, we have to consider that in the context that we also read about metta being extended to all beings. And this means no matter how unlovable they might be in terms we think of that word, still there is metta, so that it has to be understood and not in a literal lovable sense. If we think of someone as an enemy, then there is no metta. If we don't see them as an enemy, then there can be metta at that moment. Metta doesn't mean that there is a special feeling of friendliness or lovableness or whatever we want to say, but it can be something less specific, and it's the absence of any enmity or animosity towards another being.
Okay, just one moment, because I just think about it. So when thinking about metta, and there are different aspects of it, like there can be wishing good things for others, being helpful, and also like when there's respect or appreciation or respect for others, at that moment there's metta, but it's like different aspect, just like when we talk about dosa or fear, or it can be just different aspects, but the same realities, right?
Even if it was the political leader that one really doesn't agree with at all, we won't make any names, sitting here who would like the microphone and one would like to help, then metta at that moment, one's not thinking at all about the character.
It exactly same other reality that can be understand. But any value or the useful from what it is supporting for the understand to be arise, or just like whatever arise now?
Does the quality of metta appear?
Yes.
When it appears, can it be understood?
It can be.
Because the quality of metta is quite different from the quality of resentment, like why does he need the microphone or something like this, or attachment, oh, he's my friend, he should have it first. So the quality of metta, just being concerned for the welfare of the others, being kind at that moment, it has that quality. It appears, it can be understood, and that is the way that it develops naturally, but without expectation, through understanding.
You mean qualities here is about
the characteristic of metta, the nature of metta,
okay.
Because it's real. It's different from
dosa.
It's different from attachment. It's different from fear. It's different from jealousy.
Okay.
Yes. So that quality or nature of metta, that usually it doesn't appear, but it can appear, it can be known, it can even be known directly when it appears.
I don't understand about the quality word that you use here in this.
Characteristic, nature.
Ah, like characteristic.
Same,
okay.
Same,
okay.
Yes.
Not about qualities for understand
just
to be understood.
Just the characteristic
nature. Okay,
we have
got
many
it.
Words like that. And at that moment when metta arises, there is the wholesome effort, patience, that prevents akusala arising at that moment.
Like right now that I'm having a lot of metta to the other people who are using the microphone before me. But I have no more comments really about metta, but I was just wondering the difference between metta and karuna, because when you said that, like for example, like helping Nina, I find, I don't know, that sounded more like karuna, but I don't know exactly what would be the difference. I mean, I know that the object of karuna is the suffering of other people, and the object of metta is like wanting other people to be happy. Or that's like the difference. That's what I know.
So metta can arise with any kusala cittas thinking about the others. So no matter you're suffering or not suffering as you wait for the microphone, there can be metta at any moment thinking about anyone, whereas karuna is when there is thinking of the difficulty or disturbance or suffering of the others. But even thinking about how difficult it is to understand Dhamma, there can be karuna and metta at those moments. Like, for example, the Buddha had the greatest metta and also the greatest karuna because he understood better than anyone else how very sick and disturbed life is, that how sick and disturbed everyone is without understanding while continuing in samsara. So it can be very wide as well. But metta is more common because anytime, any situation, whenever one's with anyone.
Can there be karuna without metta?
I don't know it, Tanachan.
Because metta is adosa, to be friendly, ready to help.
Oh, right.
If you don't like Kunina, you don't help her. Or will you?
Yes, also.
So it's the difference between having no metta, no karuna, and when there's metta, to be friendly, ready to help. Well, wishing for everything, every person, not just one person. No matter Kunina or who, just the same.
I think one can help even one's enemy if that person is seen to be in need. But at those moments, there would be also metta.
That's why Buddha is the best of all friends, right? And when he teaches with Mahakaruna, because he is the only one who knows that everyone who doesn't have right understanding is in darkness, helpless to understand what is now. With his panya, see? Three characteristics, three qualities of the Sammasambuddha, the panya, and the purity, and the mahakaruna. But without kindness, there cannot be karuna.
Excuse me? There's...
Without metta, without kindness, there can't be karuna.
Oh. And can there be karuna without metta?
No, that's
they
the point.
They have to work together all the time.
So earlier we were talking about the roots. So as Gong said, with all kinds of kusala cittas, there must be alobha and adosa. So when the object of the citta is people, and when it's wholesome, so adosa is there, considering the needs of others with metta, but not always karuna. So when there is karuna, metta is there. Alobha and adosa are there at that moment, but karuna doesn't only arises when there is particular circumstance, seeing the suffering or difficulty of the other. But for the Buddha, as Ajahn mentioned, because whenever he's with anyone, he sees the difficulty or the disturbance of others not understanding. So karuna is there at those moments. Like even now, there can be metta and karuna when one would like to share with others or help others understand or make it easier for others to understand, because one knows that not understanding is a kind of disturbance or difficulty. So then there can be metta and karuna at those moments. But usually, like when one just is friendly to the neighbor and waves hello, there can be metta but no karuna, because one's not seeing any difficulty or disturbance. So metta is more common.
Is there metta jitasika? Adosa jitasika. Is there karuna jitasika?
Yes.
And is there mudita jitasika?
Yes.
No? And is there upekkha jitasika?
Yes. Upekkha.
Is there upekkha jitasika?
What kind of jitasika?
Sobhana.
So there's one chetasika that arises with all sobhana chitas. Tatrama jatata chetasika, and that is upekkha. But when we're talking about upekkha as a Brahma vihara, what is the object of that upekkha? What is the object of metta?
Wishing good to others.
So it must be other beings as object, yes.
Right.
And when it's karuna, what is the object?
The suffering of others.
Right, so others. And when it's mudita, what is the object?
I don't know. Somebody else knows?
Metta can help.
But mudita is all beings can be.
All beings, rejoicing in the good fortune of others, but other beings is the object. Mm-hmm. And so when it's upekkha as Brahma vihara, what is the object?
That's why we learn about the absolute reality. How many jetasikas are there? How many chittas? How many rupas? In order to know that they are not self, the more there is the understanding of the realities, it is clearer and clearer that it cannot be taken for self at all.
So it's the kind of equanimity, tatrama jatata chetasika, equanimity arises with all sobhana chittas, but when the object is other beings, equanimity towards other beings, then it is upekkha, Brahma vihara. So that's why it's not a separate chetasika, it's tatrama jatata. So metta and upekkha are both already included in adosa and tatrama jatata chetasika, but karuna and mudita are not already included, so they are separate chetasikas.
Because we have different accumulation. When we see people in trouble or they're so very sick, we can have metta, see. But it depends on whether there is karuna or not at that moment. Because some people cannot look at it, see, just turn away. But they have metta towards that person, but not the way to help or to clean or to touch, like that, see. But when there's no one, then it can be conditioned for karuna. But if there are people who can help, she'd like to do other things, not to help in that way. And that is me.
That's my love.
Yeah, because I cannot bear the sound of crying, or when people is in trouble, so very sick and with whatever is unpleasant things around, and have kindness. But when there are someone who can help, I will be the last one. But I will later, because of accumulation. It doesn't mean I don't have karuna, but I have metta. I understand that sickness and the trouble and the feeling, and I am friendly. But for karuna, I'm not used to do that, to wipe, to something like that, to take care like a nurse. I cannot do that at all. But if there is no one, I will. But someone like Khun Wani, she's so kind. She can do everything in the hospital for us. Yeah, like a nurse, yeah. That's why no one at all, only different accumulations.
Sarah, just now we talk about upekha. There are many meanings. It's upekha, 10 upekha. Upekha can be tatapaccha, tata, cetasika, and can be panya. Yeah. There are many meanings.
But here we're just talking about upekha as the Brahma Vihara, which with other beings as object, because this is why Ajahn was asking whether that upekha as Brahma Vihara was separate chetasika.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I mentioned it's included in Tatramajatata, and she said we should know how many chetasikas. So only 52 chetasikas. Mm-hmm. Like someone said yesterday, why isn't fear a separate one? Or someone might say, why is this kind of upekha not a separate one? But it's that quality, that equanimity. So equanimity, tatramajatata, just like adosa, arises with every sobhana citta. So there's equanimity whenever there's any kind of wholesomeness. But when it's that kind of wholesomeness with other beings as object, then it's upekha, the Brahma Vihara. So at any moment of kindness, upekha is there and metta is there, but karuna and mudita do not arise with every wholesome citta. They just arise in particular circumstances. Like if Nina doesn't have any good news or anything nice that's happened, no conditions for mudita to rejoice in her good fortune. Just like if there's no difficulty, like now there's no difficulty, so no condition for karuna, but condition for metta and equanimity whilst thinking of her. So this is the point that was being stressed about understanding which kind of chetasikas always arise with kusala chittas and which ones are extras at particular opportunities. And we were saying for the Buddha, karuna can arise at any of those moments thinking of other beings, because he understood the suffering and the disturbance at any moment when thinking of other beings. But for us, not at every moment.
Can I ask if someone else who take the tree or plant as a being, and he care the plants for the good of the plant, like watering or giving food for the tree. So can we say that there's metta in there? I mean, they take the plant as a being and they care the plant.
And when they take the plant for being a being, if they, let's say they think that this tree outside is a being, is it right or wrong understanding.
It's wrong understanding.
So when there's wrong understanding and one thinks it's a living being that one is kind to, can it be metta?
But I mean, the feeling might be the same, that you care about the other and you other being, and you may have
like
the same feeling.
Like I might care a lot about the tablecloth and think it's a being, but is it metta or is it attachment?
Attachment. But what about if someone else already died, but the other doesn't know that he already died, and he's still like taking care of the body without knowing that that person already died?
Ignorance. They may be confused, but if it's not a living being, then metta can only arise with regard to living being. There may be other kinds of adosa, other kinds of kusala cittas at that moment, but what we read is that if it's metta can only be to living beings, yeah. But someone else may say, but it's living being in another realm, but...
Thai, does a plant have citta and cetasika?
No.
Okay, so it's not a living thing.
I think your question is like if you were nursing a person with metta who was dying, for example, and there's a moment of death and you continue, but
I mean,
you're nursing that person and you're not sure, then the same mental state, although that person has actually passed away, you're wondering whether that is still metta or it becomes a different...
I'm sorry, just let me explain the question. Let's say the nurse, he take care of the people in the hospital, and most of the time she's taking care with the metta, let's say, but one of them already died, and she doesn't know that that person already died, and yeah, she's still like
that's
caring.
Just the example I'm giving, that she may be actually caring for someone, bathing them, and they die at that moment, but she doesn't know, so she keeps bathing them,
yes,
right?
Yes.
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 So that's your question, is
I think also that some time might be thinking about. It's often spoken about in the suttas that to dig wells and to plant trees for the benefit of beings. So I can see there, it seems to me, that there can be metta involved when you dig a well, or even though the well, as we know, is not not nama, but you are thinking of beings who can benefit from this, like, or planting trees, which you might think of planting a fruit tree for the benefit of beings. So I do think there is, even though we're dealing with inanimate objects, there can be conditions for metta.
But that is different because...
I know it's not... I know it's when, yes, hold it, Sarah, if I may say that.
Yes.
I know it's different, but I still think that it can be metta at those moments when we think of beings.
When one thinks of beings.
When we think of beings.
Planting the trees and thinking of
that's all
of the
I was just thinking
of others,
with with Thai. That,
yes.
Just because we do something that's not related to animate beings, like human
but
beings.
But it's the being, it's the human being who thinks of the tree as having some kind of benefit or non-benefit. The tree
Excuse
itself
me,
has no citta and cetasika.
No, I'm absolutely clear about that.
Or no benefit.
No, I'm absolutely clear about that. I'm just talking about when you're considering other beings' benefit, then you might be taking care of whatever. Like in the case of Jonathan Gaith, even though the creature died, you might be thinking of his relatives.
Yeah, the tree is something that can be used by other human beings to benefit other human beings. But it's not in itself thinking in terms of benefit, because it doesn't have any citta and cetasika to do that. It's merely...
It's like when I'm
it,
building.
It merely, if it moves or does anything like a Venus flytrap, grabs a bug or something, that's merely by nutrition. It can do that.
If one's planting and thinking of the welfare of others who can benefit, it can be metta. But if one's thinking of the benefit of the tree, then that's different. That was Thay's example.
Just like when I'm building a house, right? Thinking on the benefit of other beings. I'm not thinking.
It can be meta, but if one's thinking of the benefit of the house, then...
Was that what you were thinking about, Thay? Maybe that sense of...
There's the example of the dying person, which I think that if you're having metta towards a living person and that person dies and you don't notice it, that the dying of that person doesn't affect the state of mind or the chetasikas which are arising at that moment. So
and the point is, does it matter? Because at that moment it can be a dosa chetasika, but if the person is dead and it's not metta, but it's still a dosa chetasika if one is helping or clearing up or being useful. Often people ask this, but it's...
It doesn't affect the mental state as subjectively experienced, but according to the text, it can no longer be metta because there is no longer a living being as the object. But I think it doesn't matter what the mental state is called, there can still be awareness of its wholesome aspect or the feeling that it accompanies it, or something like that.
And in the suttas also, the example, the Buddha said that when you throw away food and you wish, may those in need have, that is a very high level of kusala and will obviously be their adosa as well. So just because there's no actually beings present doesn't mean to say that there can't be a level of metta there, for it seems to me that when we throw away something that we don't need into the rubbish bin, we might think of beings who may benefit.
Yeah, but that's the metta of the person throwing away the food. It's not the metta of the tree, the food. The food has no metta.
Why do your friends think that plants and trees are living beings?
No, I just thinking because maybe the same mind state for the person who take the tree as a being, and he may care about like animals with the same state of mind when he or she care about the plant.
Quality of metta is the kindness or considering the welfare of the being, like Betty said, there must be chitta and chetasika, the one that is alive, that experiences and would like to be happy just like other beings here. So for the plants and trees, everyone knows they don't have experiences of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
No, I mean for the people who don't know about the Dhamma, and I think that there's a lot of people still believe that is a being.
Yeah, I'm familiar with what you're describing. People believe that trees can experience pain when they're cut, for example, and they have measured, I don't know, some kind of vibrations or something. So they like to hug the tree, both to give it support and to gain some support from the tree. And they do think that it is, whether you'd call it a living being, I don't know, but they do think that trees can experience pain. But they are quite mistaken. Obviously, it's a wrong belief on their part. So the object of their mental state is not a being, which means it's not metta.
I still don't find logic in that statement. Because like at the moment when you're having metta to a dying person and that person dies without you noticing it, why would the dying of that person change your state of mind or change the conditions of your state of mind? That's one example. Another example is a robot that you may think you're a primitive person in an island and you see a robot and you think it's a living being and you can feel metta for it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yes, but when a person dies that you know, let's say you're at your parents', your mother's, father's, whatever, bedside, and he or she dies, there is there will be feelings of metta, there will be feelings of sadness, there will be different emotions arising when that person dies. So yes, it does change your state.
That's not my example. My example is that I'm taking care of a dying person.
Yes.
There are moments of metta when I'm taking care of that, of course.
Right, okay.
And then that person dies, but I don't notice it. I don't notice when that person has died. And I still think it's alive. And still, what I would suppose is that the same feelings of metta will be arising because the conditions are there for it, because I don't know that it's dead. So
well,
let me finish.
Yeah.
If metta cannot arise towards a person who is not alive, towards a dead person, that would mean that at the moment that that person dies, without me noticing, the metta that was arising will stop arising.
I don't think so, because we all have memory and feeling of people who have died, or we find out later the person died. Maybe we didn't know the moment he died. Okay, but why do we remember these people when they die, or if we didn't have them?
Let's consider, when metta arises, it arises for the rupa or to the being. No matter that state, body, but you think of that being and you have metta towards, no matter where that person is now, parents and deva and on. See, so metta has to have being as object.
There may be no change in the way the mental state is perceived by the person, but in actual fact, from the moment of jutti-jitta, it does not have a being as object, even despite the mistaken feeling of the person who's doing the caring.
Being is a concept anyways. So what's the difference if it's...
It's a shorthand. It's like saying body. Being just means has citta and cetasikas. There are experiences.
But I can be experiencing metta just thinking about my mother, right?
Can we just take Garuna then as an example? Garuna has the suffering of another being as its object. So would you agree that from the moment of the death of the being, there could not be the mental state of Garuna? As Ajahn explained, there's just rupa there. No jitta, so no suffering.
For the beta, you know, can you have the Garuna? But you cannot help them. So it's only metta. But it has to be being to being, not to the body or the rupa.
There are two different things, metta and karuna. But metta, I think I can think about a being and have metta, right? Yeah.
Now they can be thinking about the Vietnamese friends who left yesterday who are in Vietnam, one knows there are alive and still experiencing. But if you're talking about the person who has died and passed away, then it's just thinking about an idea of that being when they were alive in this realm.
But it's the same thing. If I think about any being right now, I don't know if that being is alive or not. But still I can have metta.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
As he's born, she's born, and you think of them as being, you can have kindness.
Right.
Sorry, Ajahn. What was the point you just made, Ajahn?
No matter after death where that person is, hell or heaven or whatever, thinking of being, we can have kindness, metta.
Like when there's so-called transfer of merit. and one is thinking of past being.
One thinks of the being as they were here, then there's no such being. But it's just a technical point, like at the point when that person dies and one doesn't know. I think it's not really important at all.
It's clear to me, really, because it's a niyama, it's just the way it is. It's like in the case of killing, there has to be a living being. If there's not a living being there...
And you don't know whether the person has died, why does it affect the karma? It's just the way it is.
Just the way it is.